Welcome to Planting Pinellas, the podcast that digs deep into the heart of gardening in Pinellas County, presented by Master Gardener volunteers of the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. I'm Charlotte Vaughn.
I'm Alan Shapiro. Whether you're a local looking to connect with your community or a visitor curious about your area's culture, conservation, and all things green, this is the place for you.
Join us as we explore the people, places, projects, and of course, plants that make Pinellas a thriving hub of sustainability, innovation, and natural beauty. From gardening tips to environmental initiatives, we've got the roots of Pinellas covered. So grab your gardening gloves and let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Planting Pinellas. We are officially in 2026 and the beginning of season 2 of our show. Today is our first episode for the year for the month of January, and we are super excited to dive back into all things Pinellas County, and especially we have a guest today.
And our guest today is J.P. Gellerman, and I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce yourself and what you are and who you are, J.P.
No problem.
I'm very excited to have you here.
J.P. Gellerman. I'm the UF IFAS Extension Director here in Pinellas County.
Yeah, and so we really want to kind of set the tone this season with what is Extension? What do we do? Why are we here? Why are we valuable in this county, taking it to another level of right. Extension as a whole and things that we're in the Master Gardeners program and we see it from that perspective, but you get more of the overhead perspective of all the other parts of Extension. So I'm excited to hear more of your perspective of what Extension does.
So I'll go ahead and start with the whole 5-minute elevator speech about Extension. It started way back over 100 years ago. Primarily because some very smart folks in the Congress found and figured out that there's a lot of research and education that's happening, or a lot of information that was being developed at the university level that was either not digestible by the general public because it's technical in nature, or it just wasn't leaving the university. So what good does it do for a researcher to do research that you never hear about and can implement at your home, at your farm, your business, and right. you actually utilize? So somebody came up with a pretty smart idea of saying, hey, we're going to have agents, and I'm air quoting, nobody can see me, but you're going to have agents, extension agents, that are going to extend the knowledge of the universities, land grant universities across America to the general public for their benefit. Information is what? The most valuable thing you can give to anybody, right? That's more than money, more than anything. If I can provide you information and education, I can advance a whole group of people simultaneously. And that's exactly what transpired in America in the 1890s, 1900s, and moving forward. Mm-hmm. We educated primarily agriculturalists on how to grow crops better, more efficiently, with less pollution and or less fertilizer, herbicides, and all that kind of good stuff. So we led the world in agricultural production and still do.
So was this a federal law?
Yeah.
Oh, so this started at the federal level. It's
federal level. They were the ones who created the Smith-Lever Act that created land-grant universities. University of Florida was established as a land-grant university, provided land to do research, to do agricultural education. Mm-hmm. And my research, I went into the archives, the UF IFAS archives. I can't believe I went in there. I can't believe I found it. Thank God for the internet, right? We had an extension agent all the way back in, I want to say 1919 somewhere. They were already talking about advancing and improving livestock and cattle breeding and all that kind of good stuff. So there were very few people here, but we had an extension agent right out of the get-go.
And it's amazing how many people that impacts that you don't really think about. I don't have a farm, and yet I benefit from what the farmers are doing here.
Absolutely. So I will fast forward a few years. So like most communities and most civilizations, you start with agriculture. That's the primary economic generator. That's the primary business of a community getting started. And as time progresses and markets improve, what transpires? People get more money. They start bartering things. They start developing more crops that are a high value. They start making businesses and supporting materials. And your economy and your whole community starts to expand and develop, right? Mm-hmm. Pinellas County has expanded and developed to the point where we are 99% built out. There's very few lots left for actual development. So we've completely eliminated traditional agriculture in Pinellas County as an economic industry.
Right. And not to say that there aren't some agricultural spaces, because there are people that have horse farms or massive gardens.
But as a major industry, like tourism or construction or things like this, agriculture has it's transformed itself because all of our residences have lawns and gardens and ornamentals that all need to be cared for, trimmed, all provide, a lot of us utilize fertilizers, herbicides that need professional training and or people to apply it. There's a whole new industry of agriculture that has developed in the residential sector that needs education, that needs information, that needs expertise.
Yeah. That's an important part, an important point that you made. And I think that that's really important for us in Pinellas County because as you said, we really aren't agriculture. But I think people think of extension and think of agriculture and don't think of anything else. And I'm assuming from what you're saying that the extension provides much more information than just agriculture, especially in our county.
Correct. So extension has changed right along with the community. So the community has gone from an agriculturally based community to a residential and urbanized entity. And extension has gone from, I can guarantee you know, the very first extension agents were livestock and or row crops, right? We don't have either one of those agents anymore, but we have commercial horticulture. We have Teresa is urban horticulture because the demand, the need for information in those two areas is hypercritical. But we also have marine sciences. Myself, I do community development. So I just got done doing a green infrastructure, an engineering webinar to provide CEUs continuing education credits for urban planners, engineers, floodplain managers on how to do things better in engineering stormwater. And that's a big thing, right? Stormwater and Pinellas.
Absolutely. That comes up from time to time here.
It does come up from time to time, especially in our county. And that's what's important.
So for me, I'm trying to extend because we have specialists up at the university who specialize in stormwater and floodplain management. And they're doing cutting edge research on that. So I'm reaching up to them and asking them to provide their expertise down to the local levels to help our developers, engineers, architects accept and understand that new cutting-edge research. So that's how I'm extending the knowledge of the university to the local level.
And honestly, that kind of blows my mind to think that, you know, our local community is benefiting from world-class level research and scientists and all of that, that we literally have a direct line to UF Extension, you know, the UF research, the UF scientist, and then through them even to a network of other universities that I know I've seen some research back and forth between UF and Texas and even California because we have some similarities in parts of our climates. It's just amazing that we get access to all of that just by having an extension office here.
You are 100% correct. So that's our front door to the greater university. So when somebody from a different department or from parks or from the city, one of the cities says, hey, JP, I have an issue with X, Y, and Z, I can reach up to the university and find somebody. We have 5,000 faculty members, full-time faculty members up there that I can reach out to and bring down here for local expertise, which is an amazing resource.
Yeah. The benefit of that is just incalculable. It's amazing. Right. So tell us a little bit more in particular, like the mission of Extension and maybe some of your specific goals that you have personally.
The mission of Extension is to extend the knowledge of the university to all of the citizens of Pinellas County. So we have an Extension office in all 67 counties. And that was purposely done so we can extend that knowledge to all people because you're all taxpayers, right? And your tax dollars are going up to the state. And the state funds the University of Florida. So that money comes back to your community through my providing you information, expertise, and programs here locally. So that's the larger goal slash mission of the university is to provide all of the citizens, regardless if you're in a city, the county, municipality, unincorporated, it's where you're all our clients and our customers.
It's interesting that they call it the cooperative extension.
Yes.
And that is something that it's not a silo. It's literally a network and how it's so much more than just that one little office that the network of people within the county and like we've already mentioned of the resources that we can draw down. But how does that cooperation really work?
We have partnerships and collaborations with many different organizations throughout the county to provide them expertise on different projects that they're working on. Sometimes they draw on us because we are outreach and we have connectivity to the to the greater population. And we are experts in basically providing and relaying that information to citizens. So a lot of these organizations that we collaborate with have money, but they don't have the resources. They don't have personnel to extend what they're trying to accomplish. So if it matches our mission, we go ahead and do that. Tampa Bay Estuary Program, for example, has a mission of reducing microplastics and to helping people understand the impacts of microplastics in the marine environment. So we do education on microplastics to help people better understand that that water bottle that you took fishing, if you end up going over the side of your kayak, it breaks down over a period of time, and those little pieces of plastic don't go magically away because you don't see them. Right. They're ingested by bacteria, not bacteria, but small organisms and fish that you're ultimately eating, mm-hmm. and you're ingesting those plastics as well. So it's an ongoing kind of thing, but we help them meet their mission goals.
So it sounds, from my perspective, if we think about extension and you say cooperative extension service, it's an educational piece. And that's what I think is different when it comes to these other organizations, which are more regulatory in my mind, like Tampa Bay Estuary. I mean, am I wrong in that assumption?
One of the Ten Commandments that we have is we are not regulatory in any form or fashion. We do not, you know, we don't tell people what they can't do. Mm-hmm. So if you come to me and say, hey, I have an issue, or you come to Teresa or Steve and you say, hey, I have an issue in my landscaping and the grass is dying or whatever, we'll take a look at it. We'll provide you the information. Hey, from our analysis, you have, you know, take all root rot or some other chinch bugs or whatever. These are the best management practices to do that. And this is the scientific approach to it. But it's up to you to actually do it. I'm not going to say, hey, you need to do this. I'm not going to initiate any kind of regulation on you or anything else. I'm providing you that information. I've been a growth management agent, a C-grant agent, a 4-H agent, a community development agent, and an administrator in my 22 years in extension. And I've done those type of programs like growth management. I've had neighborhoods come to me and ask me how they can work with a developer who's developing properties next to them. I'm like, I can provide you the information, I can provide you the guidance, but I can't do it for you.
Right.
You have to do it for you. That's the part of extension that sometimes is frustrating, is I can't make people do the things that they need to do. I can only point you in that direction.
Yeah, and giving recommendations based on the science-backed research.
In terms of the parts of extension, I know we talked about this in our very first episode with Teresa, but can you kind of talk about the different parts of extension? Because I know we're at the Oak Center, which is 4-H in the community garden here. But what are the parts of the extension that you oversee?
Pinellas County has a very extensive extension office. We have 4-H, which is youth development. It's an amazing program. It's one of the very first programs, and I'm talking about extension nationwide, that was ever developed. It's a nationally recognized youth development program that does amazing things for kids. And if you see kids go start in 4-H and they're in there for 4 or 5 years, it's an unbelievable transformation that they undertake. They're confident. Yeah. They're public speaking. I don't know about y'all, but when I was 12 years old, I was not going to get up in front of a group of adults and give it. And these kids give amazing presentations. They're doing community service. It's absolutely a phenomenal program that really benefits kids for their entire lives, not just while they're in the program, but they take those skills and advance them throughout their lives. We also have a Marine Sea Grant position that focuses on marine education. It's based out at Whedon Island. And that position has historically looked at the marine environment. Piney Point, remember that Piney Point spill that we had out there that has dramatic effects on the bay with nutrients and all kinds of loading? That position would be looking at the long-term impacts, what people can do to limit their impacts on the coastal estuary area. So if you're living in a coastal community, if you're living on the water, I'm just giving you this as an example. You go out in the boat. It's great. You pull the boat out of the water. What do you usually do? You wash it down. And it's going straight into the estuary that you're living on and paying a premium to get in there. So there's better ways to clean your boat, to take care of that environment. The reason you're living there is because the water's clean and clear and there's fish swimming around and you want to keep it that way. So the marine agent really does a lot of education on that. We just did a summer camp. Actually, it was a spring camp back in March. And we got small kids, 7 to 9 years old, out in the bay seining and small fish and crustaceans and going through there and touching them and seeing them and seeing what they do. You've never seen the joy in a seven-year-old's face when they pick up a shrimp for the first time. And I had this conversation when I was a Sea Grant agent. We seined shrimp came out, and this little boy looked at it and goes, "What's that?" I said, "That's a shrimp." "That's not a shrimp. That doesn't look anything like a shrimp." I'm like, "It's a shrimp. I'm pretty sure it's a shrimp." And he's fighting with me in argument. And I was like, "What do you think a shrimp looks like?" And he's like, "They're short and they're brown and they're covered in dough." He's only thinking Popeye's chicken shrimp. Never seen a shrimp before.
Yeah.
And that was a meaningful thing for that youth. How to quantify that, how to put that into dollar, I don't know. But I know it's meaningful. I know it made an impression on that young man.
Well, and honestly, not even just the kids. Yeah. I got to participate in the eco-educators workshop last summer, and we went seining out from Whedon Island, and we were just as giddy as those kids. It's a cool experience for sure.
It's amazing. Those experiences are invaluable.
Bringing an awareness is so important. And I think especially in our community, which is so built out and urbanized. It's such an important thing. Like you said, he didn't know. He thought it was coconut shrimp. That's what my shrimp is. And bringing that awareness is so important. That's something that I was doing many years in my education, trying to bring an awareness to the students of where does your waste go, for example. And bringing them to a field trip for that was just invaluable.
How do you protect something if you don't know what it is?
Absolutely.
How do you value something if you've never seen it or you don't understand it? How do you do that? I don't know. But Lara does a great job in that. She's up at Brooker Creek. She's our natural resource agent. A lot of people take her classes to better understand the natural environments and to understand what they're seeing at the preserves, because that's important as well. You can walk around in the preserve. I know I am obviously not as educated on the things and the plants and the fauna out at Brooker Creek that she is and her staff is at Brooker Creek. And when I take a walk with the family, I don't see half of the things that she does.
Yeah.
Right? You take a guided hike with Lara or a guided hike with one of the interpretive guides out there, and it's a completely different experience for you. But what is in your backyard? What's flying over your head? How can you help maintain that? How can you provide some habitat? These critters, there's 99% of the counties built out. There's still wildlife around, and they need every little bit niche of habitat that you can provide them.
Absolutely. So, and that's something that we've talked about as far as like, what can I do? And even that a lot of our population live in communities where they don't own the land that they live on, whether it's a mobile home park or a condominium or even apartments and other shared dwellings, that even those circumstances, you can still have an impact by keeping just your general surrounding areas clean and making a difference with the people around you. And even just a container garden can make a big difference. Something out on your patio, five stories up off of the beach, that butterflies are going to find it eventually. Yeah, there's so much that we don't think about, like, can I make a difference? And yet each one of us doing those little things, that it adds up.
I can't agree with you more. And it adds up in being the example for others as well. So when people see you doing something, it kind of goes, they might not do it today, they might not do it tomorrow, but they see that it starts to add in the social consciousness of, even if something is so small as picking up some litter and putting it in the garbage can, it might not be your litter, but you just pick it up anyway, because that's the right thing to do.
So in our first season, we focused a great deal on the Florida Friendly landscaping principles. Is there an agent that works with them?
Absolutely.
And what is her role and what does she do?
So we have two folks, Doris Heitzman and Melissa West, who work in the Florida Friendly Landscaping. So they're the folks that go out and help you with native plants, help you look at your irrigation issues that you have on your lawn, and help you find better ways to conserve water on your property. So we just had a person that came, I just got an email from them not so long ago. I don't have the exact numbers, but it was a substantial reduction in their irrigation costs, and they were so thankful because their water bill came down enormously from the assistance that Doris and Melissa provided them. And that's typical. I get those all of the time because they're out in the community. They're helping people better understand, hey, if you can replace some of that sod with native landscaping and bushes and properly irrigate it, it looks beautiful. It has habitat functionality, and it also reduces your water bill and our consumption, because we have to think, you're on a peninsula surrounded by salt water on three sides.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me. There's a drop of water on this sandbar, you know, and we have to really conserve every single drop. Lara, actually, she did a great presentation when I first started, and it really opened my eyes. Not too long ago, I did a podcast on the Florida City County Management Association, and I brought in some water management specialists and some city managers out in Aubendale, I believe.
Okay.
In the middle. And they have severe water issues because mm-hmm. they're growing so fast. They don't have the supply. And to replace the water plant is in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So wow. it's an amazing issue. It's a dynamic issue. It's a very concerning issue for everybody in Florida, and especially for us living on a sandbar surrounded by saltwater on three sides with a million people and growing.
Yeah. And I know I've done some podcasts where they talked about the Water Project 2070 and just looking at how the consumption rates that we have today are simply not sustainable. So like you were talking about that one individual homeowner that experienced a budget savings on their water, and yet I'm immediately thinking that's a conservation savings that benefits all of us because we're already having to pursue alternative sources of water and, you know, water reclamation and all these different things that all of us can make a difference. And if we're wasting and overconsuming, then we're not going to be sustainable for the long term. And at some point, we're already in a drought for this year. Our winter season is our dry season. And yet, are we going to make that up or not? And if we don't, where does the water come from? So it's huge.
See, a little secret, because you were asking me in the beginning what my goals were and vision for Extension yeah. was. And sure. I'm going to preview that question a little bit in the sense of all of the agents in the office are working together collaboratively to promote water conservation messaging.
Okay.
I'm working in stormwater to provide engineers a better way to do flood. Lara has the water stewards program that's teaching policymakers the dynamics of the water issue in Pinellas specifically. Doris is working with the homeowners. Teresa is working with the master gardeners for the master volunteers to go out and promote how to properly plant and irrigate mm-hmm. and take care of the plants to reduce the water consumption. Steve is working on the commercial side to help the commercial side of plant production and maintenance, those professionals to understand how to maintain those landscapes. So it all works together in this beautiful harmony. So,
and all of that yeah, is Extension.
All of it is Extension.
That's
among
awesome.
Other things that we're doing on top of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What other things since you brought it up?
Well, we're also working on, we have a huge field day coming up in April. It's called Integrated Vegetation Management because back in 2019-ish, there was a little issue with glyphosate, if you don't remember, Roundup.
Yes.
A lot of people had a lot of concerns about where glyphosate was being applied, how it was being applied, who was applying it, governments are applying it. Where are you doing it? Why are you doing it? And so county came up and said, hey, we need a policy on how best to approach this use of herbicides. And they came to Extension and we worked with cities. We sat for probably about 18 months working with the different city leaders and folks working on that to come up with an approach that minimized our use of herbicides on public lands.
So is that field day something for individual homeowners or more for business professionals?
It's for government workers. So it's that integrated vegetation management program that we do. We teach just to government folks because we want, our whole goal is to reduce herbicide use on public lands.
City workers and Pinellas County
correct.
Workers. Specifically Pinellas County?
Pinellas County, correct, okay. At this moment. There are a couple other counties across the state who have reached out to me for information on it because they need this similar situation and they really appreciate our collaborative approach and the dynamic approach to it. And I'll give you a synopsis of the whole thing. I teach it. It's about a two-hour program, but the whole point of it is if you deal with weeds, plants that are unwanted in a certain area, because that's what a weed is, right? Mm-hmm. You can have the most yeah. valuable, a mango tree, but if it's in the wrong spot, it's a weed.
Yeah.
If you deal with the weed when it's an inch tall, it's a lot easier to deal with than when it's 30 foot tall, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
So if you let things get out of hand, then all of a sudden you don't have a choice but to utilize some significant amount of herbicides to handle that, to get rid of those exotic invasives, especially our friend, the Brazilian pepper, mm-hmm. not our friend.
Right.
You can cut those things down and they grow right back. So you got to mm-hmm. apply an herbicide to kind of get them out of
sure.
there. But if you just pull that little seedling out, and that's what we teach all these municipal folks. Like, you can just pull that little seedling out. You just saved yourself a lot of time, energy, and money and application of an herbicide.
It involves knowing how to recognize it yes. and that's scouting
that's
for
that's
it,
where
all kind of things.
Yeah, that's where I went. My head went right to that. Yeah.
And that's the kind of education that Extension will provide then.
So here's another integrated thing. So I teach the overview, integrated vegetation management overview, like steps to take, how to do all this stuff. Lara, Steve, James up in Brooker Creek do the plant identification, exotic plant ID. So okay. we work in collaboration with one another. So the rangers and the municipal folks, they take my class, then they take their class. So it all works together.
And they're getting some CEU credits for this, right. which helps them with their career also. Career advancement.
In general, is there a cost for those programs to the professionals?
I do not charge for my integrated vegetation management for the county workers. Wow. We charge a minimum fee for city folks that participate, like $20, because okay. I give them a $20 manual.
Yeah, sure.
So we're just covering costs. We're not making any money for that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because that information to the cities benefits all of us. Because they're doing things in a better fashion. They're saving money. So for me, that's a savings for everybody involved. Mm-hmm.
I know you mentioned Steve Robinson. Yep. What is his role in Extension that's kind of different than what Teresa does or what Doris does?
Great question. So he provides education for professionals to achieve and maintain their licensure. So a lot of these chemicals, fertilizers, things that we do on the professional side require certification and license. And they also have to maintain those licenses by continuing education credits and units. Steve provides all of that. So mm-hmm. he provides basically tutoring courses so folks can get those licenses. And he provides the professional side, the private side of industry, the opportunity to maintain those licenses as
and
well.
A lot of those classes that I've come across with Steve and some of the others, just private citizens can audit in sure. a sense, and you might not get the manual.
Right.
If it's a webinar or something, that it's open, you can register, you can tune in. And some of the stuff is pretty high level, but then some of it is just for people that want to know more at that level, that it's accessible information. It's pretty cool.
Oh, Steve is great. I mean, mm-hmm. I teach some of the classes, and then he teaches another section of another class that we cooperatively uh-huh. teach together. And he's been around for many, many years, and he has all kinds of anecdotal stories, and I mm-hmm. always learn something regardless. Like, I'm like, oh, wow, I had no idea, Steve. Yeah. So he's yeah. always providing some interesting little nugget of information. Yeah, you always learn a lot when those classes.
Yeah. So I looked up the UFIFAS mission. It says the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences is a federal, state, and county partnership dedicated to developing knowledge in agriculture, human and natural resources, and the life sciences to make that knowledge accessible to sustain and enhance the quality of human life. That is a mouthful.
That is a mouthful. Wow.
But with all of that in mind, I just want to ask you, what is your mission statement, like specifically to our county, to our extension office, to the programs that you have an impact on? What would you say is your mission and your goal?
It's always to improve the life of the citizens of the Pinellas County, to improve our living condition. And that goes through providing meaningful educational courses and information to the citizens to solve real problems, practical application of information. In a nutshell, we are as flexible and we provide the programs that are needed at the time. So during the hurricanes or after the hurricanes, we switched over, and Doris and Melissa were doing a lot of retrofit applications for landscapings that were destroyed during the hurricanes. We had a office project of trying to figure out a way to plant 1 million trees in Pinellas County because
wow.
the canopy of the county was so heavily damaged. We do not know the extent of that damage mm-hmm. right now. But as a group, we were talking about how can we get 1 million trees planted in Pinellas County before the next hurricane.
And that's something that Florida Arbor Day has a hand in mm-hmm. distributing free trees to the local
Correct.
Community.
And one of the things that we're trying to put together is basically for Arbor Day is to get information, zip code information for the people that receive those trees. So we can put a map together, a heat map to say, hey, these are the places that we've planted a lot of trees. And then hopefully at some point talk to some of those folks and reach out to some of those folks and say, did that tree survive?
Okay.
Because we are trying to provide education on how to properly plant trees. And unfortunately, sometimes with the tree giveaways, the Earth Day things, people take trees and then it sits in their backyard for mm-hmm. 3, 4, 5, 6 months. It might not be dead, mm-hmm. but it's so root bound. Then you plant the tree, it doesn't grow. So we're trying to provide that information, like how to properly plant it and to get it into the ground quickly after you take it home.
And possibly maintain it too.
And to maintain it.
As it grows and matures. That's an important piece of it.
And the right place. yeah. You don't want to be, putting that plant And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to make a confession. So we had a member of our office, our Parks Department, was very ill. She had a pretty serious form of cancer, and she was doing soursop, and it was really medicinal for her cancer that she was suffering from. And she was like struggling to try to find it. I took some of the seeds and I was growing saplings at my house, and I went and bought a tree and I planted it probably 4 feet from my shed. Oh. And then I asked Teresa, I'm like, how big does this tree get? She goes, 30 foot. And I'm like, oh. Yeah, that was a real letdown for the extension director to put.
It's okay. Yeah.
I think we both had to move things.
Charlotte and I have talked about this before, where everyone doesn't do everything the right way right away, but you learn, and that's part of extension.
Hands-on, learning by doing.
Absolutely.
Learning by doing, and that's nothing wrong. And I think we talked about, just as being master gardeners, how many mistakes we've made. You learn from it.
Absolutely.
You do.
Yeah. And I think it's just amazing just thinking about so many facets of this program that even the level of involvement that we both have as master gardeners, like I've learned new things today just talking with you that I didn't know about extension before. And there's just so much that I think it's invaluable and irreplaceable in our county.
And I think one of the important things is, as you said, it's a partnership. You partner. So I know that the city of St. Pete has an urban forester, right? And I'm assuming that they talk to Teresa, talk to you, and collaborate in working together on all kinds of projects. And I think that's what's so important. And so many people have to realize that extension is not just master gardeners. It's not just somebody coming and getting a soil test. It's not just somebody asking questions about their yard or something. It's so much more.
Yeah, there's things that come up on a daily basis that I sometimes struggle to figure out how we can support, because it is an amazing mission. It is an amazing part of the county and a valuable resource to have. But we can't do it by ourselves, because we'll never have enough staff to actually meet all of the demands of the community by ourselves. And that's why we need volunteers like yourselves. That's why we collaborate with these different organizations, so we can do more together than we can individually. And I just want to say thank you to the Master Gardeners. Thank you to all the volunteers, because you guys do a lot. You're out there teaching folks water efficiency. You're helping us with coastal resiliency. You're helping us in so many different areas that we can't do it by ourselves. And that's a big part of the collaboration of extension, is utilizing volunteers to their maximum capacity. Really, thank you guys. All of you out there, if you have volunteered or are thinking about volunteering, please do. And thank you for your commitment to a better Pinellas.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for coming and joining us today. It has just been so fun to dive into all things extension and kind of who we are, what we do, and just learning so much. And again, thank you for your role in this county and for joining us on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope I can do it again in the future.
Absolutely. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for everything.
All right. So we are going to dive into our Ready, Set, Grow segment for the month of January here. And of course, January in general tends to be one of our cooler months out of the year.
In general.
So, you know, you think about January and you think about gardening, and first of all, like, should you be gardening in January in the first place? But
we're here in Florida and in Pinellas County, especially. Yes, this is the best time to really think about gardening and getting out there and doing things.
Yeah, so many things that really struggle in our summer heat can grow very well right now, or if you get them started now, then they have enough time. Let's say that you're trying to produce a fruit or vegetable or even herbs or such, that they have time to actually have a season before they get stressed by our heat, that this gives us a great time to enjoy more things that are cooler weather appropriate. And so what are we going to do to get ready for that? Because that's always where we start. And the crazy thing is, here in Florida, we think about the endless summer, whatever, but this is, you know, considered a winter. And we have plants that are actually sensitive to the cold that we experience here.
And I think, yes. And so I think you have to consider if we are going to have some cold, and there are microclimates. So I think that's important to understand that in our county, we really don't have as much frost as other counties, but there still are some microclimates where you could get down if it gets close to freezing. And then you have to think about what you're going to do to protect some of your plants.
And there's a difference between actual freezing and then frost, which can occur at much warmer temperatures, and then what we would consider chill hours. And chill hours are actually the reason that some fruits like peaches, except for select varieties, won't grow here. Apples the same way, that they need more chill hours than what the Florida climate provides. And yet other things that are more tropical based can suffer just from chill hours. And that ranges anywhere from like 45 degrees, even up to 59 can be considered chill temperatures for certain plants. So there are some plants that will grow around here that they can't tolerate anything below 60. So that's surprising to me.
Yeah. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. And again, I'm going to go back to our county being surrounded by the water. We are more protected than other counties around us when there is a freeze warning or a frost that may happen. So what can we do? One of the things, if you are going to have some cold, is to cover the plants that are sensitive.
Right. And something that I've heard mentioned is that you want ghosts, not lollipops, where if you're covering a shrub or a tree or something, that you don't want to just wrap the foliage and anchor it to the trunk. You want to wrap the entire plant and put something on the bottom of that cloth to kind of anchor it down directly to the ground, because the ground is what's going to hold the most of the warmth. If you're just creating a little bubble or a lollipop around the foliage, then it's still going to get too cold. Depending on what it is, it may be damaged by that. But by anchoring it all the way to the ground, then you're trapping in some of that heat from the ground around the plant.
And that's the important piece.
Yeah. Yeah. The heat can radiate up inside of that cover and really keep it protected. And another thing in that is January, we're in a drought. This is one of our driest months of the year on average. So we need to supplement water, because the water will actually help hold and convey that heat in the ground. So if we water the plants before the risk of chill hours or frost, and then cover it, that's going to help trap more of that heat inside of our cover and protect the plant that much better. So keeping that in mind, that kind of takes me to the other part of our ready, which is something that pretty much we have to do every month here. Check your irrigation system. Turn off your irrigation system unless it needs it.
I hope our listeners aren't getting tired of us talking about that and saying that.
Sorry. But, you know, it is a drought, and yet it's cooler weather. The plants are not experiencing as much environmental stress. So we really don't need to be irrigating nearly as much as we think we do.
Correct.
So let your plants tell you when to water. We talked about that in our episode in the last season, but let them get a little stressed. It actually builds character and helps them dig down deeper and be stronger.
You don't want to let them get too stressed.
Sure.
Because if you let them get too stressed, then there's other issues that can come up with disease
pest pressure,
and pest pressures and all of that. But if you can get to that spot where it's just right, and then you water, that would be fine. And a lot of plants this time of year are going through some dormancy also.
Right.
And so they may not look as pretty, and that's okay. And I think that's another thing that people have to...
Tolerance. Yeah. And then talking about plants going into dormancy, this is a little bit more into the getting set portion, where this is a good time to prune anything that isn't spring flowering or that it flowers on new growth while the plant is dormant. Is the greatest time to go ahead and shape and prune. Make sure that you're pruning effectively, where you're choosing a good strong leader if you're trying to grow something vertically, or that you're eliminating things that cross over each other, making sure that there's airflow inside of the plant. And there's pruning guides online. I'll put a link to some of that in the show notes. But
we're going to get into a whole episode on pruning, because there's, as you mentioned, there's some specific ways of making sure you prune well and prune right, and it can help to make your plant more healthy.
And another thing that I found interesting as far as getting your garden set up is sorting your plants. Sort what you've got and decide if things are getting crowded. You know that they're going to start growing and spreading even more in the upcoming season. So this is a good time to select the healthiest ones, or the ones that are in the right spaces that you want them to be, that they're happy where they're at, but maybe you can thin them out. Or if you've come across something that maybe volunteered itself because one of your neighbors has invasive plants, pull those out, do an inventory check of what you have, what's doing well, and what is starting to get crowded, where you want to give it a little bit more room to be healthy as it continues.
And it's a great time to be out doing this.
Oh, yes.
The weather is just magnificent,
gorgeous weather.
And gorgeous. And the humidity is wonderful for us at this time of year. And so it really is a great time to do that. I think another thing that's kind of useful in terms of landscaping this time of year is to think about some woody shrubs that you may want to plant. This is a good time to do that. And it goes back to, and you kind of mentioned it, principle one.
Yes.
Right plant, the right place. So if you're thinking about a woody shrub, think about where it's going to be located. So that's really important to make sure to do that. Match this mature size with the location. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you're going to be starting some woody plants, you can water frequently right now and then get it established. But once it's established, it's good.
Yeah. And what are we going to plant right now? That takes us into the grow section. And of course, we love flowers, but there's things that we can be planting in the cool season now that will last well through the spring, or some of them even year-round. But this is a great time for them to get established before they get overstressed by heat, that they can get their roots settled in where they can get access to the groundwater more efficiently. So some things that you might be able to plant as a flower in full sun even would be alyssum, baby's breath, wax begonias, calendula, delphinium, cosmos. There's so many things. Verbenas are a good one, and petunias are kind of a classic. And many of those can handle partial shade as well. And that's just the flowers.
The herbs, a lot of herbs. They like the temperature that are cooler. Parsley, tarragon, thyme, dill, and fennel are some of the herbs that you can plant at this time of year and will thrive in our climate. Mm-hmm. They may have a little bit more issues as the season moves on, but there's
right.
But this is the time to plant those.
Things like parsley and cilantro that will tend to bolt in the summer heat, that you can really harvest and preserve it in our cooler weather, and then just anticipate that it's probably not going to last through the summer unless you can shelter it from the heat in some way. I've put shade cloth over my herb gardens and helped to extend some of that, but it's still... Eventually, it's going to overcome.
The humidity gets it. Yeah. What about the vegetables this time of year?
So a great thing that you can do, honestly, to save money, anything that you can start from seeds, you're able to save a lot of money because you get usually anywhere from 10 to even 50 or 100 seeds in a packet for less than the cost of a single started plant in many cases, depending on where you have access to shop. So if you are interested in starting some vegetables that will grow throughout the summer, things that transplant well would be different kinds of beans, melons like cantaloupe and watermelon, okra. We can plant okra almost any time of year, but it does better in the warmer months. Getting it a head start where you can start to get some early harvest on it, if you start those seeds indoors and then move them out once they're established, then you're going to get a return that much quicker. Peas, radishes, squash, even onions, those are easy to transplant. Lettuces, any kind of greens.
This would be a good
time
of year.
Those do really well. I've got some lettuces started and they're already a few inches tall. And, you know, I'm getting ready for some good salads and everything. But carrots, even starting tomatoes and peppers, different kinds of spinach, even sugar cane. You can grow sugar cane around here. And getting that going, that's one that's easy to transplant if you do start it from seed. And I've seen it in some of the big box stores where it looks like a little bit of grass, but then it grows up into the sugar cane.
So this would be a good time of year to start thinking about some of the warm weather vegetables. Mm-hmm. So you get them started at least when the warmer weather comes in March or April, you'll start having some harvest from them.
Right. Well, and even if it's not the harvest, that you're buying yourself time. Correct.
Right.
By planting the seeds, or like in the case of potatoes and sweet potatoes, the slips, that if you are starting those things now, that you're going to end up with the same kind of product that you would go in May and buy from a grower as a 8 or 10 inch plant, you've just done the growing yourself. So again, you're going to pay as much for that packet of seeds as right. for that one little plant. And depending on how much you need, maybe you just want the plant and you can do that later. Maybe you want to be able to do more with your budget. So you start now from seeds.
So one of the other wonderful things that goes on in January for us in Florida is Arbor Day.
Yep, our Florida Arbor Day. And that is the third Friday of January every year. So this year that falls on the 16th. And some places are celebrating on the 17th as well because Saturdays are a little bit more flexible sure. for a lot of people. But we are specifically having an event at Brooker Creek where they're having activities and giveaways on the 16th.
And it's from 9 to 3.
And Brooker Creek is up in Safety Harbor.
And some of the scheduled activities at 9:30, they're having a Florida Arbor Day hike, stories and songs with East Lake Library at 10 a.m. And at 1 p.m., they'll have a nest box building workshop, but there's free trees for bees. There'll be hands-on exploration stations and tree quests. So I think it's going to be a fun event. And I think there'll be some other events probably going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, so feel free to search around and see what you can find. But that gets us all set to grow in January, and we will see you guys again next month.
Thanks for tuning into Planting Pinellas. We hope you're feeling inspired to get involved, learn more, and grow alongside this incredible community.
Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you like the show, leave us 5 stars or a review. And don't forget to share with fellow plant lovers. Until next time, keep planting, keep growing, and keep making Pinellas County a place to thrive.
This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension in Pinellas County, Florida, an equal opportunity institution.